Good morning, Taoiseach.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks indeed for coming in to us. Look, loads to get through in the next 15 to 20 minutes or so, but I suppose look, we have to start with the subject everybody is talking about, the weather. We're delighted you could make it in. We were afraid you might. I presume you didn't jog in that weather,
no,
did you?
No, I didn't. I made it in about 40 minutes. The traffic was unusually light this morning, believe it or not. I'm sure because of the weather, but once we got the main roads, it was okay. But obviously around where I live, it was... a lot of snow.
Pretty hairy. And look, there is a red warning from Medair. The advice to people, I think, today is not to travel unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah, not to make any unnecessary journeys. So the red warning applies in Dublin, all the counties surrounding Dublin, and also Louth. And then there's orange warnings in other parts of the country. So we're asking people to pay heed of the warnings, stay tuned to the radio, watch the TV, keep an eye online as to what the warnings are, because they will change over time. This is different to Storm Ophelia, which was a storm that lasted for a few hours. This is probably going to go on for a few days. Obviously, on a human level, would ask people to make sure to check with neighbours, particularly those who are living alone, and make sure that they're okay. The roads are being gritted, not all of them, but the main roads are being gritted, and we've stockpiled salt in anticipation of this. Enormous work has been done by the homeless teams last night, making sure that rough sleepers were encouraged to come in. I'm told this morning that less than a dozen didn't come in, and there is food, shelter and warmth for anyone who needs it in terms of emergency accommodation. Also, the army is in standby if needed. The local authority coordination teams have been activated. We're told that there is no threat to food security, that the grocery companies and the supermarkets are able to stock the shelves. Assume that will continue, but obviously if it doesn't, we'll let people know. Obviously there is disruption, of course, to public transport, but most of it is running, but not as good as it should, needless to say.
Okay, all right. Look, thanks indeed for that. Let's move on to some of the big issues. Today, I think people are probably almost jaded talking about Brexit, but today is a really, really significant day. Now, it looks like you have achieved what you set out to achieve, and that this this text will include specific reference to full regulatory alignment between the North and South, which is a coup, unquestionably. The difficulty is, though, how can the British government agree to that? Because the DUP, we know, will not agree to that.
Yeah, what happened today at 12 o'clock Brussels time, which would be 11 o'clock Ireland time, the draft withdrawal agreement will be published. And that is an international treaty that provides for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, the circumstances under which they do so, how we're going to deal with the financial situation, citizens' rights, Irish issues, particularly in relation to the border. And it really is a follow-on from what we've been working on for quite some time now. After the referendum happened, we sought an assurance from the United Kingdom that there wouldn't be a hard border. Got that as a verbal assurance. We got that into the political agreement that was agreed in December, which we called the joint report, and now it's been written into the legal text. So the usual charge against me, as you know, is all around spin, and that some people were trying to suggest in the last couple of weeks that we'd overspun or overplayed or oversold what was achieved in December. I think people will see today.
You've got that in the text.
But people will see today that charge from the opposition and others is not correct.
Okay, you've delivered it. The question is, can Theresa May deliver it? Because the DUP will not wear this, will they?
Yeah, I suppose this is where option B and option A come in. Option C is how we can avoid a hard border. We set it out in legal terms today. It's very clear that in the same way as we have a common travel area between Britain and Ireland, we could have a common regulatory area involving Northern Ireland, and a lot of the rules of the customs union and single market would apply in the north, and that means there doesn't have to be a hard border. So it is doable. We've set it out in a legal text, or the European Union, of which we are part, has set it out in a legal text, and that is option C. But it is option C. And our preferred option, along with the British government, is option A, which is that we have a very close new relationship between the UK and the EU that is so close that it doesn't require a border. So now it's up to the UK to bring proposals to the table to make that possible. And I hope that we'll see some indication in Theresa May's speech, the Prime Minister's speech on Friday, as to how they intend to do that.
Can you be remotely
confident?
If they
can't do that, there's still the option B, which is... You know, these bespoke British solutions, this technology that we're told can allow us to avoid a hard border. Again, 20 months to write that down. But if it is written down, we can look at that. But it's very much now, it's not okay for people, whether it's pro-Brexit politicians in Britain or people from parties in Northern Ireland, to just say no now. It's incumbent on them.
The British government needs to deliver.
It's incumbent on them if they can't accept the backstop, well, then they must detail how option A or B would work.
And because, that goes for the British government
all
as well.
Yes, it does. Because we've all said that we want to avoid a hard border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. I also want to avoid a border between Britain and Ireland, by the way. That's one of the reasons why I wasn't for Brexit in the first place. I don't want checks between Liverpool and Dublin any more than I want them between Newry and Dundalk. But now it really is up to those who can't accept the backstop to actually come up with those alternative solutions.
And I don't think anyone on this island would disagree with a word.
And actually
that.
Write them down. It can't be theoretical stuff about congestion charges and tolling gantries.
Has notably failed to do that to date. How can you be confident that she will do so? Particularly, we see reports on Sky News this morning. Boris Johnson writes a letter to Theresa May saying it would be wrong to see the government's task as maintaining no border. That's the Foreign Secretary saying that to the Prime Minister. They're not going to be in a position to deliver this, are they?
Well, it's certainly confusing because at the same time he was on radio, I think yesterday, promising that the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland could be so seamless that it'd be like going from Camden to Westminster. So when I listen to the British government, I listen to the Prime Minister. And she's going to speak on Friday. We spoke on the phone, obviously, this week. And I really hope that that speech that she makes on Friday will give us a greater insight into how the United Kingdom wants the new relationship with the EU to work, and some more detail as to how that can be achieved. And you know, my position is the same as the position that's been enunciated by the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, and that is that the United Kingdom can have as close a relationship with the European Union as it wants to have, but what it can't do is cherry pick. It's not possible to say that we want to be aligned to the European Union when it suits us and when it's to our advantage, but we don't when we don't. Like that's not a serious position.
We were speaking to John Walsh, the deputy editor of the Times Ireland edition, before 8 o'clock, and he put it very succinctly. He said either Britain turns to the EU and does a good deal with the EU for everybody, or there's a hard Brexit. It really is down to that now, isn't it?
Well, what we want is a good deal, and Ireland, our economy, could be impacted maybe even worse than the United Kingdom's economy if there is a hard Brexit. So I'm very much an advocate of a good deal for the United Kingdom. But it has to be based on those realistic principles that the relationship can be close. We can do something that isn't far off replicating the customs union and the single market, although it wouldn't be quite that. But the UK has to want it too.
Okay, very final question on this. Could Sinn Féin strike a blow for Ireland if it took its seats and went into the House of Commons and voted in this really important bill or amendment moved by Tory rebels, basically mandating the British government to negotiate a customs union with the UK? There's some question that the government might lose that vote. Those Sinn Féin 6 votes in it could be crucial. Should they, in the national interest, go in and vote in favour of that legislation, or that amendment, rather, in the House of Commons?
I understand that vote's been put off for a few weeks, so a lot could happen between now and then.
Yeah, Easter, they're talking
but
about.
But, you know, the Sinn Féin position is that they don't turn up.
They lobby, they have offices there.
Well, they take the money and they just don't turn up.
Do you think they should vote
up.
In that one?
Look, it's, one thing I'm not going to do as Taoiseach, as Prime Minister of Ireland, is start interfering in parliamentary arithmetic in another country. It just wouldn't be an Irish for us. One thing I would say with the North, and I had a really good meeting last night in Government Buildings with Simon Coveney, with a group of civic nationalists, people who wrote a letter to me, was in the Irish News, really asking the Irish government to protect their freedoms and advance their rights. And that's something I want to do for everyone in Northern Ireland, no matter what background they come from. One mistake we shouldn't make is the mistake that a lot of people seem to be making, is that one of the political parties, the DUP, important as it is and big as it is, speaks for everyone in Northern Ireland. You know, bear in mind, most people in Northern Ireland voted to remain. The business community in particular doesn't want to see any new borders, either north, south or east, west. So let's always bear in mind when we do talk about Northern Ireland that the majority of people in Northern Ireland didn't want to leave the European Union, and the majority of MLAs elected to the Legislative Assembly, which unfortunately isn't meeting at the moment, say they want to stay in the single market and the customs union. And I think we need to remember that, because that doesn't always travel.
Okay, let's move on to the planning framework and the National Development Plan. Before we get to the substance of the planning framework, because I think, to be fair, you did resist some of the local pressure to have one for everyone in the audience, but obviously there's a political controversy brewing in relation to this. I'm looking at various photographs in papers advertising the National Development Plan using taxpayers' money, which is entirely legitimate. But those advertisements are also featuring Fine Gael candidates in marginal seats. using taxpayers' money to effectively not just promote the National Development Plan, but promote Fine Gael. That's against the rules, isn't it?
I think by and large they're public reps. One of them may be a candidate, but
they all happen to be from Fine Gael, though, don't they?
No, there's plenty of people in them as well who are, you know, Independence, for example, Independent Alliance, and others. But just to be very frank with you, this is all done at arm's length. Nobody in my office, none of my advisors, none of the civil service working in the community communications unit signed off on any advertorials. And we made a decision, a very deliberate decision, that in order to avoid the charge of us being any way political, that we would actually do all this at arm's length. So the content, you know, no photographs were supplied. The only content that was supplied to the newspapers doing the advertorials, is the facts as to what's in the plan, Project Ireland 2040. No photographs were provided. No suggestions were made that any particular individual should be included. No suggestions were put across as to anyone being interviewed. So this was all done at arm's length, and that's what the opposition demanded. Ironically, had it not been at arm's length, we probably would have done it differently. It would have been done much more like a factual insert, which
sure,
you would have seen
because Taoiseach, I suppose people will may be a little sceptical about that, because they will say the Strategic Communications Unit, I know some of the people who work there, they are incredibly professional, well briefed people. Are they just going to outsource this to somebody and say you go off and do your own thing without giving them instructions on what they'd like to see in that?
Yeah, the instructions were that any advertorial should be clearly marked as being in partnership with Project Ireland 2040, and that's done. And you'll probably see today in the Irish Times, Harry McGee did analysis of 20 of these and said in all 20 cases, it was clearly marked, you know, with the banner saying that this is done in partnership with the Government of Ireland, done in partnership with Project Ireland 2040. So that's the instruction they gave. There were no, and the information was given.
So the allegation that the instruction was issued to make advertorials look like independent stories, I mean, that allegation has been made. Fianna Fáil have described as being ethically dubious. You reject that?
Yeah, it has been made, but in fairness to the Times newspaper who have been running the stories on this, they're making the allegation in relation to a communication between a third party. Fianna Fáil has tried to make out that somehow me or somebody in my office did this. Actually, that's not what the Times is alleging. That's an allegation that's being made by the opposition, which is trumped up. It's not. It's certainly not true, and I can say that for sure.
Do you not understand how people are in any ways uncomfortable about taxpayers' money being used for features? The National Development Plan is hugely important. No argument there. But that it also happens to include lots of photographs, and certainly from the ones I see, I'll accept that there are other politicians there, but from the ones I saw, the vast majority of those politicians are Fine Gael politicians, and they all seem to be Fine Gael politicians in marginal constituencies.
If you look at the 20 that were examined by Harry McGee of the Irish Times, 17 of them contain no photographs other than stock photographs of ministers who were at the events in Sligo, and 18 of the 20 have no names, no interviews, and are just a factual synopsis about what was in the plan. So you're talking, you know, a small number, maybe 2 or 3 out of the 20, that if you like are different to what would be standard in advertorial. And as I say, we didn't, and nobody in my office, nobody in communications unit had sign off on the content, didn't submit any photographs, didn't ask that anyone be interviewed or included, because it was all hands off. And this is the irony of it in some ways, is that because we made it hands off, because we didn't tried to control it, that this controversy has arisen. But let's not forget what the opposition is trying to do here. What we have here is Project Ireland 2040, a 20-year plan for a country that's going to have another 1 million people living in it by 2040, backed up by a €116 billion investment plan. How we're going to invest in healthcare and housing and transport and all the things that are so important to making our society a better place, making quality of life better in Ireland. And last week, all the opposition wanted to talk about was the process by which it went through the Dáil.
This week it's about the marketing campaign. It is an important issue. You do accept that it's fundamental to democracy. This idea of separation, that taxpayers' money is not used for political means. I mean, you do accept that's an important issue.
Absolutely.
Okay. In terms of the National Development Plan and the planning framework, will you deliver?
And I should say this, the communication unit is overseen by a civil service board, which is there to make sure that civil service principles are applied. And I've said very clearly that anything that is commercial content should be, you know, should be marked as such.
I assume you'd have no difficulty. It wouldn't be your call anyway, but I assume you have no difficulty SIPO taking a look at that. If you're saying everything is fully in order and fully above board here, and there was a
I understand. Fianna Fáil has made a complaint to SIPO, and I think one of the other parties has made a complaint to the Advertising Standards Authority. So I'd have absolute confidence that those bodies will examine this fairly and objectively. But like I say, what the opposition is trying
nothing
to do.
Nothing to see here. That's what you're saying.
Well, no, there's a lot to see here.
But no, in terms of the political charge. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, absolutely, because it has been done at arm's length. And that, I suppose that is the irony of it is the opposition insisted that all of this be done at arm's length, that there not be any political involvement. And because of that, total editorial freedom was given to newspapers to do the articles as they
and you're absolutely, just last in this because we won't get bogged down this, but lastly, you're confident because all this obviously is FOIable, a letter will not emerge in a month time saying, well, we'd like you to focus heavily on certain candidates and certain constituencies. You're happy that will simply not materialise,
and not a letter with my name out or a letter from any official that works in my department, third parties, private companies, independent media organisations. I obviously can't account for them.
Will you deliver?
I doubt that'll happen, though.
Will you deliver on particularly on the planning framework? Because it's something successive governments, going back to the Buchanan report in the late 60s, has bottled it on. And we've seen this mass build up in Dublin because of the one for everyone in the audience approach. Will you follow through in that plan? Because I think most people would accept it's a pretty good plan.
Yeah, well it is a good plan, and it's very different to previous ones because it is statutory, because it's realistic, because it isn't one for everyone in the audience, and because it's properly funded by €116 billion investment in infrastructure over the next 10 years, we will deliver it, provided obviously we're in position and in government to do it, but we will deliver on it. In many ways that's starting already. You know, for example, Owen Murphy has just changed the planning guidelines to remove height restrictions to allow us to build up rather than out in our cities, and I think that's a big change. I know it's controversial, but it's the right thing to do in planning terms.
Controversial in your own constituency as well.
It is, yeah.
You objected to a four-storey apartment.
I did, and you know, being in favour of high-rise doesn't necessarily mean it has to be absolutely everywhere, particularly cheek by jowl with a two-storey housing estate, but I think I worked out that of all, and there's a huge amount of development in my constituency, I can guarantee you, I think I worked out that I have objected to less than 0.1% of planning applications in the constituency. But also, you know, a lot of what's in the infrastructure plan is being delivered already. And this is a government that has a good record on delivering infrastructure. Just this week, Simon Harris, for example, opened two new primary care centres, one in Coolock and one in County Kildare. And we now have 110 of those, whereas there were 40 in 2011. When I drive past Connolly Hospital in my constituency, I can see that the new children's unit is already on the third story.
Okay. Lots been done and lots more to do. Look, I think it's probably the most important thing you'll do.
That was almost a Fianna Fáil slogan
almost,
there.
Almost, yeah.
Know.
Well,
it was a good one at the time.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things you will do in office. I suppose the other really important thing a lot of people want me to ask you about, I'm sure, is the...
One final point that I would make about, I can understand why people are often sceptical about these, you know, long-term plans and big infrastructure plans. It's also based on very realistic assumptions. It's based on assumption that the economy will grow for about 3% for the next couple of years and then slow to about 2%. Now, I actually think the economy is going to do better than that. But we decided very deliberately that rather than having the grandiose plans that you would have seen in the Fianna Fáil days, that we would base this on conservative assumptions. So I remember the old, you know, Transport 21 Fianna Fáil plan, which had a €3 million marketing budget, by the way. I just thought I'd throw that in there. It had, you know, Metro West, Metro North, you know, Lewis Cross City, Dart Underground, all being built at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was pie in the sky.
Yeah.
This is a very realistic plan and can be delivered, and we're going to drive it through.
Okay, the referendum on the Eighth Amendment. Your minister, Regina Doherty, said a couple of weeks ago, I think she got her knuckles wrapped for it, for saying that without intervention, as things stood, the referendum would be lost, particularly given the intervention of Simon Coveney and the confusion as to whether or not the Dáil will actually vote through the legislation that will be proposed alongside this referendum. There's an awful lot of confusion out there. I mean, if you're putting your money at the moment, you'd say perhaps the odds even favour the no side in this referendum.
Well, just to mention Regina, she didn't get her knuckles wrapped by me. I thought what she actually said was quite sensible, was that people can't just assume that this referendum will pass. It is incumbent on all of us who believe that the current laws are wrong, that they're cruel to women, that they're too restrictive. It's incumbent on all of us to go out there and explain to the public the changes we're trying to make and why. And that's what's going to happen between now and the referendum in the summer. I believe fundamentally this isn't about what any politician thinks. This is about trusting women and trusting doctors. We have a constitutional ban on abortion in Ireland, and that prevents us from really doing anything. It prevents us from allowing for the termination of pregnancies where somebody is carrying a child that isn't going to be able to survive.
You're going a good bit further than that. I mean, I think that's the issue, the 12 weeks issue. I think that's where most people would think that maybe the voters may have a difficulty with that.
Well, the process being put to the people, you know, and the referendum bill will be published quite soon, is that we lift the constitutional ban on abortion in Ireland. So that's the process being being put to the people, and that's what we're asking people to do. But we are obviously giving an indication as to what the Oireachtas will do once the ban is lifted, because people will legitimately ask that if we get rid of this absolute ban on abortion in Ireland, only allowed in where a woman might die. That's the only exception. The people want to know what the Oireachtas would do after that, and what we're indicating.
The problem is that Taoiseach is saying he's not going to vote for what you're proposing.
Yeah, but I think you'll see that the majority of people in the Oireachtas will take the view that they will vote for what was recommended. Let's not forget, not by government, but by an all-party committee, having listened to a citizens' assembly. So this wasn't plucked out of thin air. This was as a result of evidence analysis, deliberations by the citizens' assembly, and also a cross-party committee.
You'll be campaigning aggressively for this. Do you think it can be won, this referendum? Are you confident it can be won?
I am confident it can be won. I will be campaigning. I won't be campaigning aggressively, by the way.
Might have been the wrong
I think
word.
It's really important that in this campaign that we respect everyone's views. And I think the debate has been quite respectful to date. And that also we don't personalise it, and we don't have a go at anyone because they have their opinions, because everyone's entitled to their opinions on this. But in a nutshell, what it boils down to, what we're proposing, is that in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, that we trust women, we allow women to decide whether they want to continue with that pregnancy or not. Bear in mind, that's the period during which the abortion pill works, and loads of people, thousands of people in Ireland, are taking those pills every year, unregulated, over the internet. Serious health risks there. And whereas 12 weeks, I know, to a lot of people sounds maybe like a lot of time, bear in mind you might not actually know you're pregnant for 4 to 6 weeks, because generally speaking, it's only when people miss their period that they go off and have a pregnancy test done. And then after that, after 12 weeks, we're asking people to trust doctors to know where a termination may be required to protect the health, for example, of a woman. Okay. So the argument I know from the no side is going to be, you know, you can't trust politicians. And, you know, that's a clever argument, but it's not what we're asking people. We're asking people to trust women and trust their doctors.
Okay, no, you've made that very clear. I'm conscious you have a snowbound country to run. Two very last quick things. You're launching an initiative on pensions today. I know it's not the most sexy of topics, but it is a hugely important topic.
Really not the day to do it in terms of with everything else going on, but a really important thing. And people often talk about pensions as being a time bomb. And we all know the demographics, that people are living older for longer, which is a great thing, by the way. But it does come with consequences. And we need now to plan ahead to make sure that we have a good pension system into the future. And this plan that we're producing today is a roadmap to do exactly that. Very briefly, has four key elements. One is to protect the state pension and make sure that continues to rise in line with the cost of living, so that we ensure that pensioners don't live in poverty in Ireland. We've among the lowest pensioner poverty rates in Ireland in the world, only about 2%. We want to make sure that remains the case.
And the other one is auto-enrollment in there? Because
auto-enrollment's
the key
in there,
and
that's a really important one for private sector workers. Two-thirds of people who work in the private sector have no pension provision other than the state pension. And it's our view that, as is the case in most modern Western countries, everyone should be enrolled in a pension scheme. You can opt out if you want to, but once you are enrolled, people tend to stay in. So you'll pay in some, a bit like an SSIA.
That's going to happen?
It's going to happen. It won't happen until 2020 or 2021, but we're going to set out the legislation to do it now and the timeline. And there's a reason why we're leaving until then, because bear in mind, employers will be negotiating pay rises and so on with their staff.
Okay.
And what was done in Australia, which was very good, is they decided, you know, giving people notice to plan for this, is that maybe instead of getting, you know, a 3% pay rise every year or 2% pay rise every year, I know everyone doesn't get a 2% pay rise every year, by the way, but on average, it's 2.5% at the moment, that people would put some of that pay rise into their pension fund.
Okay.
And as giving employers and unions and and others time to negotiate that. But essentially, it's ensuring that everyone has a pension on top of their state pension.
More details on that later.
Yeah,
later
and also more flexibility around retirement because, you know, 65, 66 isn't old anymore. So we're already, we've already decided that
I'm
we're going to allow...
increasingly coming to that view. Yeah,
yeah, we're, well, me too. I'll be 40 soon. But so you know, we've already decided that public servants will now be able to work through to 70 if they want to. They don't have to retire at 65 anymore. And we're also going to do something as well with the state pension, a bit like the UK, where people can actually decide if they want to work longer, but get a bigger pension as a result.
Okay. All right. Just very finally, it's your 260 a day in office. I'm sure you're not aware of it. It's about
I didn't realize it's been that long. It seems like a few weeks.
Yeah, it's about a quarter of the time I think Albert Reynolds and John Bruton had in government. They achieved a lot in their time. Your predecessor had talked about at one point to having report cards for his minister. I'm just wondering, how would you rate how you've done today? Would you give yourself a mark out of 10 at this point?
I would never be so conceited to rate myself. I'll leave that to others.
I didn't think you'd fall into that trap. Taoiseach, you've been very generous with your time. Thanks a lot for coming into us. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, back in a couple of moments on News Talk Breakfast.